Let us add to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, so it is this day in history, regular feature now. So this day in history takes us back to 1971 and a massacre in what was then called East Pakistan, now known as Bangladesh. The killings, carried out by the Pakistani military, took place in the context of the Cold War. India had aligned itself with the Soviet Union, Pakistan the United States, which tacitly endorsed the massacre, with Secretary of State Henry Kissinger and President Richard Nixon ignoring reports by American diplomats on the ground, such as Consul General Archer Blood. Although India, Pakistan and Bangladesh had historically been part of the same empire, be it Mughal, Maratha or the British, the countries had been divided with the withdrawal of the latter in 1947. This took place after local demands for autonomy intensified in the early 20th century, with the most famous nationalist leader being a lawyer named Mahatma Gandhi.
Here he is at last, the mystery man of India. Our first glimpse as the Rajputana came alongside at Marseille. Mr. Gandhi, dressed as he said he would be, in just his loincloth, carrying with him his pots and pans, which he declared at the customs. He was trotted around Marseille to several receptions and made one or two speeches which rather frightened the French authorities. And so we go on our way to England. Well, here we are at Folkestone, with the Biarritz coming alongside, and as Gandhi said, in proper English weather, pouring rain and bitterly cold. Miss Slade was the first ashore to tend to the luggage, that is, the goat's milk, etc. She was followed by Gandhi's son, and then came the little man, still scantily clad, but with an extremely wet blanket around his tiny frame. I'm sure he must have been frozen. We were in thick overcoats. He picked his way through the puddles along the quay side, and he was wearing sandals, by the way, to the waiting motor car. He insisted on sitting up in the front seat with the driver. He said that he could see better that way. And so off to London, whilst his followers went by the boat train. In town, quite a lot of people had waited in the pouring rain outside the Friends' meeting house on the Euston Road to see what he really looked like. But at first they were quite disappointed, because he went in the back way. But shortly afterwards he left by the front way. And then they really did see quite a lot of him, even his knees. And so to his Poplar home, where we leave this bizarre little man, whose coming has caused so much comment, complete with loincloth, spinning wheel and goat's milk, feeling sure that he cannot complain of his reception or the publicity he has received, from which, by the way, we always understood that he shrank.
While the British Empire was initially able to maintain its hold on its colonial possessions, this became increasingly untenable in the aftermath of World War II. As they left, the British authorities chose to partition the subcontinent along religious lines, with India a majority Hindu population, while Pakistan, split into East and West, was majority Muslim.
August the 15th, 1947, Independence Day for India. In London, the flags of the new Indian Union flutter over the headquarters of India and Pakistan. An era has ended, a new epoch begins. A subcontinent larger than the whole of Europe becomes two self-governing dominions within the British Commonwealth of Nations. After less than a century under the British Crown, India's most crucial hour has struck. 5 months ago, Earl Wavell left Delhi to be succeeded by Earl Mountbatten. Under Queen Victoria's great-grandson, the transfer of power is completed. Pandit Nehru, Congress leader, is India's Prime Minister. Muhammad Ali Jinnah, Muslim chief, becomes Pakistan's Governor-General. Today, the fate of 400 million Indians is in the hands of these leaders. During the past 200 years, The British gave India law and order. They built roads and railways. They irrigated the lands. But India's future welfare largely depends upon communal harmony. 40 million Muslims will live in India, 18 million Hindus in Pakistan. Stirred by intense religious passion, communal strife has shed much blood. It still continues. Can Hindus and Muslims live peacefully together? In India, nearly everyone is hungry. When they are too frail to beg, they die. And each year, famine claims 7 million. Economically, India and Pakistan are interdependent. Success of the new regimes may ultimately depend on whether India's leaders can improve rapidly the general standard of living. To people like these, the heart of India, the word freedom is empty. To the average Indian, his rulers mean little. Democracy is just a word unheard of by the majority. This is the real challenge to Nehru and to Jinnah. Britain has fulfilled her mission. It is for India herself now to make her destiny.
This day in history will continue after these messages.
With a heartbreaking new single, Nobody Gets What They Want Anymore, and a new album, Make Way for Love, coming out February, Marlon Williams is bringing the bliss and the ache to the Auckland Town Hall. And if you want to win tickets, all you need to do is stay tuned to BFM. 95BFM presents Marlon Williams at the Auckland Town Hall. May 25th, tickets from Ticketmaster.
The Christmas lights on Franklin Road are quite a sight, or so I'm told. But nothing can my heart envelop like the love that I've developed. My snow angels, wide and go. Oh, I'll be out in a minute.
No, I want to listen. Sing to me.
Well, as it's Christmas.
Give the gift of a new passion for photography this Christmas. ProGear, unparalleled quality at 3 Railway Street, Newmarket, or online at progear.co.nz.
Hey, hey, hey. It's me, non-denominational Mistress Holiday. Having trouble deciding what to purchase your loved ones / relatives for your religious or non-religious giving festival? What about the gift of slow dive, the internet, Aldous Harding, and bad, not good? The gift of a rad time in a lovely park? Mistress Holiday says everyone wants laneway tickets. St. Jerome's Laneway Festival 2018, January 29th, Auckland Anniversary Day, Albert Park Precinct. For tickets and the full lineup, go to lanewayfestival.co.nz.
Hey, we're on Sigrid's Eclectic Warrior Hour of Power with your main mademoiselle, Sigrid.
Yes.
Oh, hell yes. We got some straight fire tuneroonies for you today. Ain't that right, Radioland? Hey, don't get too enthusiastic there, sweets. I don't bite unless you're into that. Whoa, only teasing.
I f***ing hate this. For just the hits, not the nonsense, tune in to the Thursday 1 to 4 with Sigrid. Only on 95BFM. No banter.
Now I could do with some new friends. Just a wider circle to prevent an altar. it's December. I want a love to remember. And if it's true for the ages, I'm going to move to where she stays.
Can anyone explain why the modern day whales are so big?
The Wire.
We now return to this day in history. When we left off, the Indian subcontinent had been split into two countries by the departing British colonial authorities. Although this was supposedly done to reduce the likelihood of war, conflict still broke out in 1965.
Your newsreel brings you pictures of village Awan Sharif in Gujarat district in West Pakistan. Badly mauled by freedom fighters and patriots in Kashmir, the Indians train heavy artillery units from the Chamb area of occupied Kashmir and shell Awan Sharif in Gujarat. The dead number 20. 15 persons are seriously injured and houses and property destroyed. This brutal attack on innocent civilians shows India's utter disregard for the sanctity of human life or international pledges. In hospitals, we see the poor innocent, many of them women and children, being treated for serious injuries. These are the victims of India's merciless stranglehold on Kashmir and defiance of international obligations to keep an innocent people in perpetual servitude.
There was also the further complication of Pakistan effectively being split into two countries, with power held in the West and the East increasingly unhappy with their lesser status. Demands for self-determination intensified, to the anger of the authorities in the West, who began Operation Searchlight in 1971, in which Bengali nationalists were rounded up and killed. This only led to further calls for independence, however, and conflict soon broke out again.
The bitterness of poverty and resentment in East Pakistan erupted today in a kind of civil war. Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, the leader of East Pakistan, declared the region an independent republic, which he said will be called Bangladesh, the land of the Bengalis. Pakistan is a nation united only by religion. West Pakistan has the money and the government and the resources. East Pakistan, 1,000 miles away across India, has the poverty and the misery. It seems to get in the world news only when it sets a record for disaster. Now West Pakistan, which also has most of the army, is trying to crush the revolt. There are reports of many casualties in Dhaka and other East Pakistan cities.
Massacres took place in towns and villages throughout the country. Government and military officials estimate that 100,000 people died in the Khulna district alone. Local residents say the Pakistani troops took Bengali civilians to the waterway every day for mass executions. Now only scattered bones and tattered clothes remain as grim reminders of the slaughter. Every few yards along the canal banks lie human skeletons. The victims were Bengalis, especially members of Sheikh Mujibur Rahman's Awami League, Hindus, students, and professional men. Khulna residents speak bitterly of the murder and raping which went on for months.
Diplomatic fallout from the recent war between the Indians and the Pakistanis. The Indians, in their anti-American mood, have decided to raise the level of their diplomatic relations with North Vietnam. And the Russians say they soon will recognize the new government of Bangladesh. One of the reasons why there is a Bangladesh today is the fact that troops from West Pakistan, Punjabis, savagely terrorized the Bengali population of East Pakistan. Perhaps 1 million people died.
Could you have recognized your brother over there?
Yes, I could recognize my brother, Professor Abul Kalam Azad.
When did he disappear?
He was picked up from his house on 15th December by a half a dozen all-weather paramilitary force under the army command.
Why should they have killed so many of these people?
So far we gathered during the last phase of the struggle, they prepared a list of the intellectuals, journalists, professors and teachers, and they picked up at least 250 intellectuals, journalists and professors during the last 15 days between 1st of December to 15th of December.
What was the point of killing so many people, so many of the intellectuals?
I think that they thought that they are the sore enemy because these people were the intellectuals and brain of the Bengal.
And without them, the new nation would have a difficulty.
That would be very correct answer, because if these intellectuals are eliminated, there will be a total bankruptcy, intellectual bankruptcy.
That was news footage after the massacre of Bangladeshi intellectuals on this day in history, December the 14th, 1971.